This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Multiverses, Spider-Verses, Flashpoints, and Ultimate Timelines, or Alternative Timelines. Well, Alternate Timeline could count, too, I guess. We're getting more...
Where is he going with this, everybody?
we're getting more multiverse content in, like, a year than I ever thought we would get in a lifetime. And I thought by now I would be kind of sick of it. But then, every once in a while, a movie comes across that just... completely makes us ignore that part and focus on something else entirely. That's right. We're talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Sequel into the Spider-Verse. And don't worry,
not into the Spider-Verse. It's across the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse.
No, Into the Spider-Verse was the first movie.
I looked it up six times. So what's
this because one? That is a movie. That's the first one. This one is Across the Spider-Verse.
What's the next one?
Beyond the Spider-Verse.
Well, I labeled this stream wrong. So sorry, patrons.
We're going to get the one guy who's just like, wow, they're so inaccurate. One star.
Yeah, I don't care anymore. So beyond care. That's actually, I want those people to come to our show and not like us and leave.
They're the people who listen to 5 minutes of an intro to an episode from 3 years ago. And they're like, these guys are way too political. One star.
So anyway, what's your overall thoughts on the multiverse? Because I am of... just the multiverse concept in media, comics, etc. Because I'm of several different thoughts. One is that it's stupid and lazy and dumb, and will never not be stupid and lazy and dumb. That's one side of me. That's one wolf that lives inside of me, so to speak. There's another wolf that lives inside of me that just loves like random shit of random characters and different versions of characters. And you know, we're gonna see Deadpool and Wolverine and the X-Men characters crossover with the MCU. And at some point it's like, well, the only way to really do that is just to say fuck it, multiverse. So there's the other part of me that's like, well, fuck it, multiverse, let's have fun. And I'm torn. I honestly am like 50-50.
You know, there is there's actually an article that one of our listeners posted in the Second Print Comics fan zone. Let me pull it up because I want to read this, because this actually kind of sums up my thoughts on this. Basically, Michael Shannon was doing some promo stuff for the Flash film because Ezra Miller can't, for obvious reasons. I'm just going to go ahead and read these paragraphs.
Why can't they?
Because they are crazy. So I'm going to read these two paragraphs and then I'll add it. But Michael Shannon was famously a little confused when he was asked to return for The Flash on account of General Zod getting murdered in his last on-screen appearance.
And then turning into Doomsday and getting murdered again.
That was kind of awkward. Quote, I'm like, they saw Man of Steel, right? And my managers were like, quote, yeah, they saw Man of Steel, but it's different. The actor called in a recent Vanity Fair interview. Quote, I'm like, what is it? It's a multiverse. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. Well, Shannon now knows what the multiverse is.
God bless
is.
Your soul, Mr. Shannon.
Yeah. And he says, quote, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't quite satisfying for me as an actor. He shares a new conversation with Collider. These multiverse movies are like somebody playing with action figures. It's like, here's this person. Here's that person. They're fighting. He adds, it's not quite the in-depth character study situation that I honestly felt Man of Steel was. Whether people think that's crazy or not, I don't even care. I really felt like Man of Steel was actually a pretty sophisticated story. I feel like Flash is too, but it's not Zod's story. I'm basically there to present a challenge. I would say that's basically it for me. I think that we're using the multiverse to basically try and force plot points and force things in the absence of actual creative storytelling and character development. I think when it's done right, it's done right. But otherwise, it just doesn't make sense. Now, I think a good example of multiverse storytelling isn't when you're having multiverses clash. I actually don't like clashes. What I like is the Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone was like the original multiverse anthology, if you really think about it. And then in comics, that's how it really started with DC, when DC was telling their Elseworld stories and stuff like that. And they were very... character specific. And Marvel did this too in many ways at the beginning. But over the, like, the past 10 years, and I will absolutely blame Jonathan Hickman for this, it just became a point where it's just like, we're going to grab all these things that we think people want, and we're going to try and make it mesh even when it doesn't. Case in point, Miles Morales does not belong in the 616 universe. The Maker doesn't really
belong. Because he's black, you're saying?
Because, fuck you.
I just want to clarify for the audience, there could be new people tuning in. They might just make some assumptions on based on what you're saying. I just want you to clarify
I can't believe he said that. One thar of you. So, I mean, I think it forced
that guy only gave us three. So, like, even the guy that hates us is like, but they're okay.
They're pretty thumb time. Three thar. It's like, either give us a one or a five. Don't be a middling. Don't be one of those people. But yeah, so I mean, I think it forces things to happen that wouldn't otherwise happen. I also think it's funny too that, like everything else, Marvel's eating DC's lunch. DC was the first one to write the multiverse stories. They usually have the best ones, but Marvel got to it first. And when Flash comes out next week, it's gonna appear the same way. So those are my thoughts. I think multiverse storytelling is fine. I just think we're not seeing the best of it on screen.
Indeed. Well, you know, I was so excited for the Flash movie. I did something very rare because the rest of my family doesn't want to see the movie.
Did you pre-order tickets?
Just for me. I'm going by myself. Except now I'm not, because I'm not going to be able to make it and have to do something else for work. So that's the roller coaster ride of me and the Flash movie. So now I probably will go back to when I keep saying, yeah, I'll probably see it next weekend for 3 weeks. Yeah, it's been a rough day, Renzo. Anyway, let's get into the movie. Let's change the vibe here.
Did you get the refund of your ticket, or did you just roll it over?
I haven't even looked into that yet. I think I can get a credit or something.
You can get a credit, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, the speaking of being done right, I will say, like, I would prefer, if there's going to be multiverse anyway, if we're going to have action figures playing with each other, essentially, I like it better when it's done, well, ultimately with a good story. And I think that's why these movies have connected pretty well. It's because they do have a pretty good story, and they do have a pretty interesting character as the lead in Miles Morales, who does feel distinct from Peter Parker. He does feel like an individual. He does feel like an entirely different character, which is often the problem with a lot of this multiverse stuff. It just feels like different iterations of the character. Whereas with the Spider-Verse stuff, it's not like we weren't going to get a Spider-Punk movie. We weren't going to get a Spider-Man Noir movie. We weren't going to get these characters any other way. So I'm okay with this, as this is the only way you're going to get all this nonsense is by, if we do a crazy wild movie like this. And that's how you're going to get Spider-Man 2099 and all these other iterations of Spider-Man that you just never would have seen in any way if it were not for this movie. None of these were ever going to have their individual properties. None of these were really going to ever have their own thing other than maybe some strange cameo appearance. And if that's the case, let's just strange cameo appearance everything into one movie, or in this case, three movies now. But nonetheless, I much prefer it like this, where even as weird as it is to say, it still sort of feels contained in its own way. It's all centered around Spider-Man instead of us having to think about multiple universes and an unlimited number of iterations of other characters as well.
Yeah. My big 3 points, and we can kind of jump into that, and I'd like to kind of hear your takeaways.
3 points? Was this a research paper?
No.
What is this? Cable news? All right, go on.
It just keeps things succinct for the people that only listen.
By the time you get to three, I'm going to forget the first one, but go on.
Best animation in an animated film ever.
Is this the Remzo Awards?
This is the Remzo Awards. I will say this is the best animated film ever created, period. Just from an artistic perspective. Two, it delivered on everything I was expecting from the sequel. I knew going in that this was basically going to be split into two parts because they had already announced that beyond.
I'm glad someone told you, because I had no idea. And just like I did with the Dune movie, I'm like, I always knew these things exist, but somehow I'm out of the loop on the fine details. So just like I did with Dune, I'm sitting there 2 hours in and I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up? This is going to be such a rushed ending. And it literally never occurred to me once that this is going to be to be continued, because that's how dumb I am, I guess. That's how boomery I am. I'm just like, well, they sure are going to have to wrap up this movie soon. And then suddenly to be continued. I'm like, son of a bitch. I mean, I was like,
cram two books in 10 minutes.
Yeah, essentially. So,
I mean, I kind of knew that going in. As far as this movie was concerned, it gave me everything I wanted. It's really hard for sequels to continue character development, but I feel like this is the first film where Miles is actually Spider-Man and confidently Spider-Man, and that we're finally continuing to see him in that role, especially as he's trying to figure out where he is in this vast Spider-Verse of other Spider-Man, especially when we get to the spoiler alert, the fact that he is an anomaly. And third, the only things that took me out of it were some of the not so subliminal political meandering with the BLM button. And I don't think I saw it in the film, but I know it was in the trailers because a bunch of people got mad about that. It was the Protect Trans Kids sticker in Gwen's room. And now apparently the Alphabet Mafia is trying to claim that Spider-Gwen is trans, which I'm like, you can't fucking take her. You don't get to just immediately like just say, well, this person is trans now, because where will it stop? So, you know, I don't know if that's a studio thing. A different thing.
Multiversal version of a young Remzo may or may not have had a crush on that cartoon. So you're not going to take her.
No, you're not going to take
her. Is that kind of what you're trying to tell me?
Basically. No, I'm Team Gwen. Fuck MJ. Oh, that's another thing, too. I don't know if anyone noticed this, but we got to see an anime version of Mary Jane Watson at the beginning of the film, too. And guess what they did to that redhead? Made her black. So it's just like, you know, some of the things that they continue to do. I mean,
At the beginning of the film. Peter B. Parker's version?
No. At the beginning of the film, you see Gwen as the drummer for a band called the Mary Janes. The chick at the microphone is Mary Jane Watson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's just another thing where it's like, you know, they try and put out a good movie, but they have to, you know, click on all their ESG talking points and stuff.
It's like, you can't just leave it alone.
You can't just leave it alone.
You can't just let everyone enjoy it. You have to turn it. You have to have us have this part of the show.
But I'm not going to let that take away from my overall score of the movie, which I know we'll get to later. But those are my big things. It's great. I mean, it's the best animated film ever done. Story-wise, the character development is great for Miles. And three, it's just the political poking that it does at people, which just pissed me off.
All right. If we're going to do talking points, let's see if I can keep track. I'll try to go one.
We're in the O'Reilly spin zone. Come on.
I'm not going to argue with you on the animation. I mean, there were such unique different aspects to it and unique different feels to different worlds and different characters. It was kind of like that scene from Multiverse of Madness where they're going through the different worlds, but that was only a small glimpse of the movie. But this was done way better throughout the course of a 2.5 hour movie. And it's really incredible how they got the distinct feels of, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, anime, like any style you can imagine, just perfectly blending together, which I can't say I've ever really seen on screen before, that many different styles coexisting throughout the entirety of a film. So I'm not going to really argue with you on the animation. I can't really say that I can think of anything that was better animated than this. I mean, it's a visually captivating movie in a sense. They did things too that are hard to even describe.
Have you seen people compare clips of the footage from Into the Spider-Verse to Across the Spider-Verse?
I can't even keep track of which movie's which anymore.
Okay, the first one to this one. I thought the first one set the bar really high, but if you compare how things look, you will see differences between this movie and the first one. And this movie, if we thought the first one just really upped the scale, this one surpassed it by miles again.
Not meant to be a pun.
Not meant to be a pun.
Did you know that the Lego scene was actually animated by some 14-year-old kid?
I read that story the other day. Basically,
child labor's fine as long as it's for a big budget movie. Apparently.
Well, you know, Hollywood's always been good with child labor. But yeah, the kid did that apparently within 30 days. And they had already cut the movie, but they saw him do the Lego trailer, which I shared in the fan group. And that was really cool. So they reached out to him in January. They said, do you think you could do this in a month? So the kid went ahead and did it and they sent it in. And I mean, that's cool right there. That's so freaking cool. So that's I thought that was crazy, too, because I remember being a kid in 2002 when the Spider-Man Lego set came out. And that was like all the rage for Lego collectors at the time, too. So to see that in there, I mean, this film just checked off so many things. I mean, it was nostalgia galore on so many levels.
I guess that explains why we didn't see that Lego Peter Parker the rest of the movie, because it wasn't originally part of the movie. He was just kind of like inserted. But I imagine we will in the second one.
Yeah, it's kind of like Black Adam, where they're filling in things like 3 days before the movie comes out. And it's like, hurry, cram in Superman.
Get me Cavill. All right. Well, yeah, I'm with you there. I'm with you on the story. I thought the story was great. As much as multiverse concept can lead to laziness, they did it in a way that it didn't really feel lazy. And each character that we're meeting, now I'll get to my sore points in a minute, but generally speaking, each character that we meet feels genuine and feels like they have their own motivation in many ways, even while we're meeting. In this case, I think there was something like 280 different versions of a Spider-Man in this movie that I read. But the ones that we actually meet, we probably meet like as in hear from, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 of them. And they all kind of, they all really do feel like unique characters. They don't just feel like Spider-Man with a different suit on them. Ben Reilly, Spider-Man, maybe my favorite Spider-Man in this.
Oh my gosh. I was wondering how Andy Samberg would sound as Ben Reilly. That was so freaking funny.
I don't know. I mean, this is a spoiler filled review. We will spoil the movie. So if you've gotten this far and are wondering if that's going to happen, it is going to happen. But I some things you can't spoil. Like I can't really spoil like how apparently it was Andy Samberg. I didn't know it came across as Ben Reilly and just how they approach different characters, not just his tone of voice, not just the way he spoke, just the and how that blends with the different animation style. Like he has this grittier 90s animation style about him too. Spider-Punk. I mean, like, characters like that were such, and this ties back into what you're saying about the animation, like such unique things done with animation that I've never seen done before, especially in the case of the Spider-Punk scenes and how they worked him in and how, again, that blends with the different styles of the different characters that carry over into each scene. It really is incredible. And then the story was done so well that you really understand the motivations for certain characters, even characters that sort of play the role of bad guy for a time, like Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099 kind of does. You understand their motivations. So they even when they're sort of villainous in the moment, there are those shades of gray there. And you kind of understand, you've seen the human side of every character. You see Miguel O'Hara having been through, seeing a reality get wiped away because of not respecting the canon. So he has seen what can happen if an anomaly like Miles gets loose. So you really do understand the motivations for these characters and they blend them all together with the various animations. It's awesome. We'll get to our scores at the end, I guess. I don't even know my score yet. But in terms of an enjoyable movie, it's really hard to top this, especially if you are any kind of Spider-Man who has been a fan of any. There's stuff in there that our son was there. I mean, it's just me and him that went to see this. He was getting references I didn't get because he's seen certain cartoons and video games like the PS4 Spider-Man he was freaking out about. Mm-hmm. I didn't recognize mm-hmm. that one. So it kind of had something for everybody. Like I'm recognizing these 70s and 80s Spider-Man characters. He's recognizing this. So I mean, really, if you've been a Spider-Man fan of any generation, you're probably not going to get every single character because then I don't know what kind of mega.
You're going to have to watch this movie multiple times just to catch all of them.
For sure. So the way they blended all of that together and please the fans while still giving us a good story, not just tossing out the story in favor of fan service. Somehow they did both pretty darn well, I would say. So we can get into more of the finer details of the story, I guess. But I guess since we're just going to lay it all out there, I will give a few of my problems with the movie. There are a couple. One of them, way too long. It's way too long, Remzo. 2.5 hour movies should not fucking exist.
I have a question though. Did it feel like a 2.5 hour long movie?
Yes. Yeah, okay. It did. I enjoyed it, but I was like, all right, this is long. Now, maybe this is a part of my age. And as I get older, wanting to spend less and less time in the theaters, having less and less of a bladder control that I'm not making it through a 2.5 hour movie, which really pisses me off. Because then at some point, I'm going to get the popcorn, you see. And if I get the popcorn, I'm going to get the soda to wash it down, you see. So, you know, halfway through that movie, there's no way I'm getting through a 2.5 hour movie. An hour and a half movie, I can get through. Now, I wouldn't complain about a long movie if it's justified. Endgame had to be that length. I'm okay with it. Infinity War had to be that length. Eternal sure as fuck didn't. So it all depends. There is a spectrum here. Eternal shouldn't have existed. Now, most of this movie was good. It's not like I was bored. Like, come on, when's going to end? But I did feel the length at some point because I think there was a lot of extra stuff in here that didn't need to be. There was maybe 7 different scenes of Miles talking to his mom, essentially saying the same fucking thing. A lot of these talking scenes were really, really drawn out. And I just felt there was a lot in there that didn't need to be. And there was also a little issue to me that the movie itself isn't sure who the lead character is because it's kind of Miles, but it's kind of Gwen. And it feels like Miles, but in the beginning, for the first 20 minutes, it's all Glenn. You don't even know that we're going to see Miles in the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then it's mostly about Miles, but then we divert back to Glenn. And there's a different, and I'm not saying there shouldn't be different storylines, but it does feel like the movie isn't even sure who the main character is. Isn't really sure who we're supposed to be, who we're supposed to be following here. Who's real crisis? Is it Gwen's crisis with her dad? Is it Miles' crisis? Like, there's kind of two almost separate, but of course interlapping storylines there. And I think that lack of complete focus is somewhat of what hurt the, you know, added to the, unnecessarily to the length. I think they could have cut a lot of stuff out. Of course, now I guess I'm anti-trans if I say they should have cut some Gwen stuff out, but I think you gotta pick a character to really be your focus. And they had trouble doing that. So I think they could have cut 20-30 minutes from this easy. And then I would have think it was almost a perfect movie.
Yeah. I feel like if the film had just focused on Gwen, that would have been an easy way to cut like half of the time there, because only when we're seeing it from her point of view is the story moving. When it hits the Miles, it kind of stays stagnant. When we're on Gwen, it's moving because it does have a lot to do with what's going on of her. So yeah, I totally agree. It should have just fixed with one point of view, kind of like what Infinity War did with Thanos. Yeah, it had like half the Avengers here and there, but really it was a Thanos point of view movie that moved mm-hmm. everything else along.
Right. And this almost felt like it started off as a Gwen Stacy point of view movie, and it couldn't make up its mind. You know, at times it switches back to Miles and then it's a Miles movie. Then it switches back to Gwen and it's sort of a Gwen movie with a Miles sidebar. And I think I get what they're trying to do. I know what they're trying to do, Remzo. Please, everyone. That's what they're trying to do. And that's always where these things go wrong, you know, because if you cut out a little too Miles, you cut too much Miles, you're anti-black. If you cut too much Gwen, now you're anti-trans or whatever, you know, whatever. So you got to please everybody. And these two check all the boxes. So I guess they got to try to find the balance. And I just feel like that with the few of the things you mentioned, I don't mind Black Jessica Drew, but I kind of mind Black Jessica Drew, who's 5 months pregnant, and then a few months later, 5 months pregnant. I know it's because comics, we're not supposed to think about things like that. By the way, is it safe to be riding a motorcycle and traversing the multiverse when you're with child? But I guess when babies don't matter,
you can't tell her what to do.
Yeah, exactly. So that being said, that stuff is relatively minor. But I really do think that I shouldn't feel bored ever. And it's not that I felt bored. I should never think, when's this going to end? And I started feeling that because of some extended scenes that just really felt like they were, it almost feels like now movies feel like they need to be 2.5 hours. Like there's some ultimatum out there. Like now we're going to movie. This is what movies are. Movies are 2.5 hours. So you start with that premise and then you insert a movie into that instead of just making a fucking good movie.
And there's a reason why. And it's all because of the pandemic.
It's because they hate me.
It's because they hate you, too. It's because they're trying to justify people going to go see these in movies. It's why, you know, like 2020 changed the whole theater industry. I only go to movie theaters if I'm going to also get served dinner. And that's a big thing. Have you noticed that a lot of movie theaters, I don't know how it is where you're at, but like they have like dine-in service. They have like, you know, ushers come and like give you a menu and stuff like that. Like you're paying like a full premium price for gourmet food in some cases. So the whole movie theater experience is changing. But in terms of the movies, what you'll see, especially for stuff like Hulu and Disney Plus and Max, if a movie is under 90 minutes, it's immediately going to streaming. The only way they can justify putting a film in theaters, it seems, and expect it to get some return is if it's 120 minutes or more.
Interesting. Because I'm almost
trying to make it an experience.
I'm almost thinking these two movies that we're going to get out of this could be 1 2.5 hour movie in the end. Instead, they're like, well, let's make it 2 2.5 hour movies because that's what we do now.
I have a prediction why they focus so much on Rio, though. The mother.
Oh, I don't even know her name. That's how much I blacked her out of my mind. That was not a, never mind. Go ahead.
I think, and this is a prediction, and I can't spoil this because this is in the comics, I think they're trying to emphasize more of a focus on the mother in this film and try and get people to attach more to his mother because they're going to kill her in the third movie.
Well, it's not working at all. I'm going to cheer so hard. I'm going to be so happy when she passes. No, what'll get me is if they kill the dad, which that's what they feel like. I mean, that's what feels like could happen. And they killed the mom. I'm going to be like, oh, okay. Thank God. Thank God dad's alive.
Well, they killed him.
She wasted half my movie last year.
What's funny is they killed the mom in the comics, and then Jonathan Hickman brought her back. And then they killed Captain Morales in the PS4 video game. And that pissed people off because they were like, no, the dad's cool. Kill the mom. So
I don't like when they bring back humans. I don't like when they bring back any deaths in comics, but especially when it's just regular people. And then they have to like,
it's like if they brought back Uncle Ben right now and it was just supposed to be like, OK, forget 60 years of shit.
I'm shocked that no one's has anyone ever tried to bring back Uncle Ben?
That's been like they've brought him back for like moments here and there. Like they brought him back in the Spider-Man 90s cartoon for a scene in the series finale.
But he wasn't like resurrected.
No, he wasn't. He's never resurrected. He's always brought back from some multiverse or something, and then he's instantly put back in the Uncle Ben shed.
Uncle Ben and Gwen Stacy, I believe there is the code dictate that they are not to be brought back. Now, of course, Gwen, we've seen as Spider-Gwen and in other iterations, but in the official canon, I believe those characters are like, they're pretty hardline.
And once they kind of fuck with that, like it pisses people off, and they've retconned it so many times. Like there was the one where she had twins of Norman Osborn, and then recently Nick Spencer went ahead during his Amazing Spider-Man run. He went ahead and retconned that. So that never happened. That was like a Mysterio illusion or some shit like that. So like it never matters. And then they tried to bring back Gwen during like the dark web thing, but that it turned out to be, you know, a hallucination type of thing. It's never real. So yeah, it's one of those mandates where it's like they're never gonna fuck with it. Here's my biggest point of confusion. And you being a stickler for canon, maybe you can explain this for me. So this is really, I think some people got confused with it. This is a Sony movie, but they recognize and acknowledge what has happened in the MCU as far as Spider-Man goes. Because of that, things are getting a little confusing. One, we know that obviously Venom is canon to everything. We had a Venom cameo at the end of No Way Home. We had a Spider-Man cameo at the end of Venom, Let There Be Carnage. And
what do you think, by the way, of the sort of live action intrusion into the Venom verse, not by our titular character, but by the villain of this, who we'll discuss in a bit. Spot. The Spot.
I thought that was hilarious with Mrs. Chow. I thought that was the best way to do it. I thought that was funny. I thought that
it's perfect. I like it because it's like a tease. Like we could do this. We could actually go all the way here, but without actually like having to bring in the.
It wasn't so hardcore.
Yeah, doing the full interaction with Eddie Brock part.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It would have been like a little too much without giving us more. That would have felt
too slapsticky.
Agreed. So yeah, I think it was the best way to just tease us and remind us like, all right, which really makes it clear if there was any confusion, not that there's like multiverses and multiverses, I don't know, but this Spider-Man multiverse does exist in the same overall multiverse as our MCU because it's established that it's connected to it, that the Venom multiverse is one of them. And it's also established that and Venom through Spider-Man No Way Home through Eddie Brock going, you know, back and forth is established to be one of those multiverses as well. So theoretically, now what I wonder is if these characters cross over, would live action characters see animated characters, or is the animation supposed to be what, like, we, how we see it? You know what I mean?
Well, that's what's confusing me. So like in Loki and everything in terms of time, so there's time travel, then there's multiverses. You have the rules for time travel, which is created in Avengers Endgame. And then Loki takes a step further with the concept of anomalies. I think their concept of anomalies is still what applies to the Spider-Verse. However, in the Spider-Verse, they make it clear that the multiverses are not a cause of fragmented timelines. But then in like Morbius or other movies, you have stuff where it's like Vulture from No Way Home is now suddenly in Morbius, which is all in the Venomverse. And
they didn't even bother explaining that.
No, just no, like, that was so fucking
here's hilarious. Vulture.
Yeah. So it's like, do the rules for how the sacred timeline and anomalies and multiverses apply in the main MCU, do they seem consistent in the Spider-Verse? Because part of me wants to say they do. Other parts of me want to say that they've just created their whole other thing and they don't care what Marvel has to say about it.
I think they fit it in as much as they can, but not to the point that they're going to stress about too much about it if it doesn't exactly work, because it's not their fucking movies.
So you didn't see any major continuity flaws of that?
No, I think, well, here's the biggest flaw, I think, and it's not even, it's the naming of the universes, but then it's like, who names universes? Because so in the first Spider-Verse, they called their universe the 616, I think, or no, it's something with Peter B. Parker's universe. Yeah, they said Peter B. Parker was from the 616, but actually he's not from this 616, because our 616 is Tom Holland and Doctor Strange, and they kind of reference that in the movie. Well, there is a reference to like the Doctor Strange, Tom Holland, like,
but they renamed that universe.
But they called that like 1999 or something, right? I believe
it's 616199999. He goes on and like adds a bunch of numbers to it.
Okay, yeah. So that's what it is. So yeah, there's like, so there's kind of more than one 616, but then it's like, who is even in charge of name? Maybe to this universe, that's 616. But if I'm in this universe, I'm calling mine one no matter what. So
it's like Taiwan versus Republic kinda, of yeah. China.
Maybe that's what it is, right? Maybe, yeah. Maybe who actually is the arbiter of what is number what universe? That was only the thing that stood out to me, that they're calling the Peter B. Parker version 616, but that's not our 616. Our 616 is this other one that has Doc, but that's minor quibble shit. I think overall, and like they call things different. Like they call it it's what they're calling the canon is kind of like the equivalent of the sacred timeline, kind of in a way. But that's confusing too, because the Loki thing, the sacred timeline is like literally because Kang is trying to streamline, because he who remains is trying to streamline the timeline. And so I'm not sure how that relates to like the Spider-Verse timelines, because there's also this thing where they actually showed what almost looked exactly the same at one point when Spider-Man 2099 is explaining the whole multiverse thing and the branches. That it's almost the same scene from Loki, the same visual, and sort of what we saw in Spider-Man No Way Home, that sort of like multiversal branching off energy stuff. So it seems to be like they're messing with the same concept, but in their own little spider way, because in this version, it's like the Spider-Man that can connect everything together. Whereas in the sort of the mainline Loki world, Kang world, it's not really based around one character. It's just the timeline in general.
Yeah. I think that's one of the weird things that,
whew, I was exhausted. Did that make any sense? Cause
it did, but you know, I think that's one of the one areas where it's like ignoring canon material comes at its own cost, because in the comics in which we start to learn about the Spider-Verse and everything, it's far more mystical. You've got Morlun and his like spider vampire family.
I know nothing about the Spider-Verse in the comics. Nothing.
Basically, it's all mystical. It's more magic than anything else. And they're connected by the spider spirit, which connects to Spider-Men across the Spider-Verse. And what these evil vampires are doing is they're going and hunting Spider-Men across the Spider-Verse in order to gain the power of like this evil spider god. So that is, you know, that's a, I don't think it could, I was always hoping we'd see Morlun in a movie. He was really cool in the early 2000s and stuff, but like, you know, that's one of those things where that would have been clear. Whether people liked it or not, whether it was cool or not, is a different thing. But that was at least clear. Here, they tie everything back to the focus point of canon, and that kind of contradicts what they're doing with the whole multiverse stuff, where it's like, if they're so different, if they're allowed to be variants of each other, because I think we need to remember that an anomaly is simply a variance who's not allowed to exist. I mean, that kind of confuses things a bit. Because why can't Miles exist? So Miles is an anomaly. Why? Because they fragmented. It's a unit.
Well, he does exist in other universes. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll get into
that,
I guess.
But in him being Spider-Man, is he anomaly because anomaly because there was a branch in the timeline, or is he anomaly because it was two multiverses colliding?
Colliding?
Well, they say that the spider came from another multiverse.
No, he came from another universe, not another multiverse. He came from universe 42. What does
that make?
Well, a multiverse is a bunch of universes. It's a multiverse that describes all the universes. There's no such thing as another
spider
multiverse.
Spider came from...
Really, if we really want to get into the nitty-gritty, anything beyond the term universe is stupid in real life. I mean, when they talk about, oh, we've discovered multiple universes, so there's a multiverse. Well, no, then that just means we're expanding what we know of as the universe, because by definition, everything is a universe. So there's no such thing as anything beyond the universe.
So they're basically trying to say the spider should not have bit him, which is what Miguel O'Hara does say.
The whole point of the movie is that the Spot and the Alchemex brought over this spider from another universe. Okay. But that's what's weird, because that spider, it's kind of made clear, that spider should have bitten Miles in that universe. So there still should have been a Miles that was Spider-Man, just not this Miles in this universe.
Okay. That's why he blames him for his Spider-Man's death.
Right.
Because there is a Spider-Man. However, when he goes into the universe that he's in at the end of the movie, his mom is like, "What's Spider-Man?"
Exactly. Well, that's because there was never a Spider-Man in that universe.
Oh, so he deprived another universe of having a Spider-Man. Oh, exactly. Okay.
He should have been that Miles, the Miles that becomes the Prowler at the end. We're just going all over the place. So I hope you've all seen the movie. The Miles that is the Prowler at the end should have become Spider-Man in that universe. And I think that would not have been an anomaly. I think the anomaly is that spider from that universe got pulled over by Alchemex, and then that spider bit our Miles, and that was the anomaly that ended that also resulted in the death of this universe's Peter Parker and the creation of this Spider-Man Miles, who is the anomaly, which causes all sorts of havoc, including one of those effects being that the Miles of that original universe that should have been Spider-Man is now the Prowler in that universe. Still, why would the teenager become the Prowler? Like, his uncle was the Prowler and works for him. Like, how did he flip that relationship around anyway? That's what I want to know.
That'll be interesting to see.
How did he become the boss?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that all makes sense now.
What did you think also of the appearance of Childish Gambino, Donald Glover, as the Prowler, which was teased in the first Spider-Man movie, because he said, oh, I got a nephew Miles, you know, in the first Homecoming movie.
I thought that was awesome. I thought that was too funny. I think Donald Glover deserves as much attention for this as possible, because he's the reason why we have Miles Morales. And I mean, he really pushed it in the show Community when he was like pseudo lobbying for the role. He was, he was the voice of Miles in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. And for him to continue to be the Prowler in this stuff, I hope we can actually see him in the full role in a live action Spider-Man movie. But for us to see him in this actually interacting with Miles, I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we talk a little bit more about some of the finer points of the movie here? Like, first of all, we haven't really talked about much about the villain, the primary villain anyway, which is this character of the Spot. I never heard of this character in my life, but he is from the comics.
Yes, he is from the comics. He appeared in the 1990s. He actually plays a more significant role in the 1990 Spider-Man cartoon. He was a scientist who worked for Wilson Fisk, who was dealing with temporal technology. And that was basically his gimmick. He was never really a villain. He was always a victim of his own science experiment, who wants to do right, but he always falls back into his own villainous ways.
All right. And he was portrayed by... I thought you would know. I know
he
the
was
voice.
By the guy from all the Wes Anderson movies ever made.
That was Jason Schwartzman. That's not even who I thought it was. Never mind. I thought it was somebody else. SBC, where we don't always know what's going on, but we do it in the moment. So what did you think of that character? So he jokingly, somewhat at first, it seems like a joke. He calls himself he's Miles Morales' nemesis. You know, he's Spider-Man's nemesis. But as we later learn his origin, he was actually the one who Miles like hit with a bagel when he was running out in the very first Spider-Man. So that's like an interesting tie-in there. And then essentially, he is the one that was working on the multiversal collider that brought over the spider that ended up biting Miles, as we discussed a moment ago. And when Miles caused the Hulk kerfuffle, as we saw in the first movie, and the explosion, the resulting explosion turned this scientist into the spot, essentially, where he basically can like travel. At first, it's just powers like to travel within the same universe, but then like through these different spots in him. But eventually he sort of like eats himself and ends up inside himself. And that ends up giving him access to the entirety of the multiverse. And that is when he really goes from sort of comical villain to like, oh, wait, this guy can take over and destroy the multiverse. So I think they did a pretty good job of introducing him. He almost seemed like he might have been a throwaway character at first, because he's kind of comes across so silly. He doesn't even understand his own powers that well, and his sort of bravado and confidence in wanting to confront Spider-Man, because they're tied together, they're mortal enemies, and we sort of write him off as a joke. By the end of this, I mean, he is the one threatening the life of you know, Miles' dad, and he's really the centerpiece of the whole movie. And again, this comes back to what I was talking about earlier, where Miles was the anomaly. The spot exists because of the anomaly in the first place. So they are really tied in together. And you could say, well, it's not Miles' fault. Yes, he is essentially the anomaly that created the spot that's creating this all this destruction to the multiverse.
Yeah, he's cool.
This is why the multiverse is exhausting even when it's done well.
Yeah, this is an Avi Arad contribution too. Avi Arad still has a lot to do with, I don't know if he has much to do with the MCU films these days, since he's kind of been pushed away, but he's still very much involved in the Marvel content over at Sony. And when the writer, when the directors and the writers were looking for a villain for this, and they were explaining the concept, he was like, you got to use the spot, because he's in the comics, he has his capability, but it's never been brought to this extent. Believe it or not, in the comics, the ones who the guy who's responsible for actually introducing the main 616 Peter Parker to Miles in the Ultimate Comics was Mysterio. So for them to base it around a Spidey villain who has his capability somehow is still really cool. And I thought, you know, just visually it was awesome. Like, their fight scene is just so funny and so interesting, since neither of them really know how to fight each other. You see him messing up at the beginning, but by the time he goes to Mumbatan to see the Indian Spider-Man, when he takes over that one collider, like, he looks terrifying. When you could take somebody who looks like a joke and then turn them into, like, you know, a massive threat, you've done a good job.
What do you think of Pavita Prabhakar?
I don't get why they have to call him. I don't know why they have to call it Mumbatan. It's like an entire, planet that's just Indian themed.
Well, I think it's Manhattan. Yeah, somehow Manhattan.
Why not just say it's in Mumbai? Like, that was my thing. Like, why not just put him in Mumbai?
Yeah, instead they had to, like, yeah, either the whole planet is Indian themed or history played out. The thing is, that's weird. I was like, so did history in this universe play out where, like, India was the world empire and they ended up creating New York? But then that doesn't make sense, because he also says, well, this is where the British stole all the stuff from us. So wait. So what did happen in this world that you guys are running?
I didn't like in the movie Big Hero 6 in like 2014.
I like the film a lot.
Yeah, well, in the comics, it takes place in Tokyo, but to make it more acceptable to, like, a Western audience, they remade it and renamed it San Fran Yokio, which I thought was stupid.
Heaven forbid, like, something actually be foreign.
Yeah, I'm like, that's kind of fucking weird.
So the kids won't be afraid.
Yeah. Foreigners. Yeah. Who's your favorite Spider-Man in this movie?
That is tough. Well, it might be tied. I don't know. I'll tell you who I'm. Well, there's three. There's three that I just love for different reasons, the way they were portrayed in the movie. So this is in no particular order. Spider-Punk, a character I was not familiar with before, but I love the character. I love how they did the art and really just blending the different types of art.
I'll tell you right now, he was my favorite.
Yeah. It's just the way they did him was really cool. And then when he took off his mask, I'm like, oh, it's just this guy. I'm like, no, that looks like how he should look. Like, that. It looks like he's like Lenny Kravitz, basically. Yeah. But with like a British punk flair. And I really like that. It was kind of subtle, but I really like his role. What turns out to be his role, again, spoiler filled, you know, the reason Gwen has her own wristwatch at the end is because Spider-Punk in that scene when they're walking through was like slowly grabbing little parts and putting it together, and then he slipped it to her. So he was actually like sort of working to help them the whole time from the very beginning, but it's really subtle, and that's like kind of why he was there. And I think it's just kind of interesting how they portray him as this sort of like anarchist who's a loner and doesn't believe in the systems, but also is part of this sort of greater Spider-Verse thing. And it's really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how he's used in the second one, but he was really a standout for me. And then I guess he would be my number one, because the other one I'm going to mention was more of, to me, just comedic relief. But done really well. And that was what I mentioned earlier, the Ben Reilly angst-ridden Spider-Man. I just loved every time they went to him, it was just
struggling perfect. With the memories of my past.
It was just so good. It was just everything. It was such a 90s. I mean, he's such a 90s Spider-Man. Everything's angry. Everything's gritty. And they nailed the art with him. So I just loved his appearances. And I love that he is sort of part of the big guns at the end, who Miguel O'Hara sends to go try to take down Miles. It's really just the ones he trusts. It's himself, Jessica Drew Spider-Man, who I could have done without with, but whatever. She neither added nor subtracted much, except she was just there. But we all know why she was there as she was there. And of course, I did love just seeing the on-screen portrayal for the first time. Well, not the first time. The first time was the end credit scene of the last movie. But really, for the first time in all his glory, Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099, as we were reviewing the book last week.
Let me tell you, that opening sequence where he's fighting, Renaissance Vulture, and you see them break through the ceiling, and you only see the shadow from the light of him pulling out his fangs to fucking bite his throat. I was like, oh my God. Me and like three other dudes in the theater were like, oh my God, he's about to do it. They kept the vampire thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like how they really highlighted the differences of the Spider-Man, like the vampire, like fangs thing, which is an integral part of Miguel O'Hara's character. And I did like how they positioned him sort of as the villain here, but again, not really a villain, more just like the hero who's doing what he has to do, doing things he doesn't even think he wants to do because of what he's gone through, because of the experience he had where he replaced a Miguel O'Hara of another universe, and that fucked everything up and resulted in the entire wiping out of entire universe. So as much as he might want to do the right thing, and he doesn't want to stop Miles and imprison Miles and take him out of the equation, he sees no option, because to him, if he doesn't do that, not only is Miles going to be gone, a whole universe is going to be gone, and then maybe the whole multiverse. So you can understand, you, even though you're sort of rooting for Miles because he's the underdog and he's the one, it's not his fault that he was bit by this multiverse. He's not acting irrationally. You can completely understand why he's doing what he's doing. You might even say he's doing the right thing, depending on your perspective. So I really like what they did with the character, while still positioning him as, they position him in such a way that you are rooting for Miles against him. And you, of course, you want Miles to win, but they're doing it in a way that they still kind of make you like him, and they still kind of make you think he's really badass. So in the next movie, when they do come together, because you know they're going to, and there's going to be some moment where Miguel saves Miles and they're all good and they come together against the Spot, or maybe some other villain that gets brought into this, if there's not enough already, I think it's going to make for an even better moment because of all the buildup and the tension between them.
Yeah, completely agree.
So those are my three. Well, who's your favorite? Your favorite was Spider-Punk?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was Spider-Punk, Ben Reilly, and then Spider-Man 2099.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what I was thinking throughout the movie was, man, are they really not going to bring in any of those original Spider-Man characters besides Peter B. Parker? And then, of course, because idiot me didn't know there was a part two, spoiler alert, at the end when Gwen assembles her own team, it is, of course, all of our familiar faces from the first film coming together.
Spider-Pig,
Spider-Man Noir. Well, I do hope they better bring back Cage for that, because I knew they said they weren't bringing him back for this, but that's because they probably just didn't want to pay him just to not talk in this. No reason no reason to give him one line. We know who he is. So they better bring back Cage for Spider-Man Noir for real next time. So I'm really like, they did this in a way that, yes, I can complain about some things. The demasculation of Peter B. Parker, a little too much for me. Like, I don't mind him being the character he is, a little bit of like the goofy version of Peter Parker, but does he really need to be wearing a pink bathrobe the whole time? That was a little too far for me. I think.
It had a weird toy line written all over it. Like, I don't need, why does his baby have a web shooter?
And why do you bring your baby around even if they're a spider baby? Like, it's not like he's a single dad. He's got a hot white version of Mary. I'm not saying those are the same thing, but in this case they are. A hot white version of Mary Jane at home, who can do a great job taking care of the kid. I don't know why he has to bring the spider kid around, except, like you said, toy line. You got to put the spider baby and the Peter B. Parker. Yeah, you're right. What it is. I could have done without making his character look so stupid, but I guess in a way, at the end, Miles kind of does outsmart everybody, does get away. And as he said, I guess it wasn't such a bad mentor after all. So I did enjoy everything. I mean, everything involving the interaction with Peter B. Parker and the other characters, it just felt like he just could have taken the bathrobe off, really. It was just a little too much of like pushing this guy's kind of a bum thing when he's really not. He really is as heroic as the other characters.
Yeah. Sorry, everything just kind of got weird for me. So, I mean, I think that was it. They did such a good job with it. You want to go ahead and jump into ratings?
Am I ready for ratings? Let me think. Is there anything I want to complain about? You know how I like to complain. I think I've complained about everything I can complain about. Because even as much as the points I mentioned today, the fact is this is a really enjoyable movie. And at least if it was a little too long, it wasn't dreadfully too long. I did feel it was too long. There's things that could be cut out. There's things that could have been streamlined. But it's not Eternals too long. It's just you could have done this a little tighter too long. That being said, I think, what should I do? We're just going to go straight out of 10 on this. I think given the points, I think overall, the first movie is a better movie, even though this one feels cooler in so many ways, because there's like kind of cooler animation. There's more going on. There's more characters. There's more of the Spider-Verse. As a self-contained movie, I think the first one is a little better. And I'd probably give the first one like a 9. So why don't I give this an 8.5? I'm going to put it just below. What's the first one? Into the Spider-Verse? I can't keep track. The first Spider-Verse, I'm just going to put this just below it. And I probably need to see this a couple more times before I can further sort of, you know, maybe my view will be different down the road. But I just think that the first one's more of a complete movie. Well, I mean, quite literally, because this is a part one, a part two. This has to be continued at the end. So that always leaves something a little bit lacking. But at the same time, my quibbles are quibbles, and this is a fun fucking movie. Like, this is a blast. This is awesome. If you've been a Spider-Man fan your whole life, you're gonna fucking love this movie. It's only people like me who, I want to be honest with you, and I always want to bring it for real. So I'm going to give you the points that stuck in my head as I don't know about this or that. But at the end of the day, it's a blast. So I'm going to give it an 8.5. That's just because I think that's still a pretty damn high rating. Is that high enough though for it? Fuck it. It's a 9. You know what? Because the animation art is so stellar and so above board that I think whatever it might take away from the first movie, it's regained by the incredible art. You're right. So I would probably give them both just a 9. They're just both great movies.
Yeah,
and I'm going above 9 for hardly any movies. That's reserved for like the top 5 movies of all time. You know.
Yeah, and I'm going to give this a 9 as well. My only criticism that will keep it from a 10 is the fact that there's a cliffhanger ending, and if it was a succinct story. Much like the first film, I probably would have gone 10. But, apart from my criticisms, the pacing, the animation style, the casting, the way that they chose which characters they were going to do, I think was fantastic. This is the must-see movie of the summer. If you have not been to theaters yet, you have to go see this. I'd say go see it in IMAX. If I had to see this again, I'd see it in IMAX, because this is just a crazy fun movie.
Question, Remzo, did you have a weird sound issue with the beginning of the movie?
I did. There were multiple points where you hear characters talking, and my wife and I would look at each other in theater and we're like, can you not hear what they said? Apparently there was a sound discrepancy. Mm-hmm. So what Sony has had to do was they fixed it, and they sent out an updated version to all the theaters playing it. So basically, if you saw it before like last Tuesday, you'll hear that in certain big fight scenes that character dialogue is muffled. That was causing a lot of concerns for people. So they went ahead and adjusted it.
I wonder if you can get it. I bet you could. I know I could, because I'm good with the managers. If you saw it once and want to see it again, you could probably go, hey, I saw this before, but the sound was so bad and I heard it's better now. Can I get the free ticket? I guarantee any manager is going to give you the free ticket.
Oh, yeah. Because you're going to end up buying enough food to justify it anyway.
Exactamente. So yeah, at the end of the day, you know, we are here to give it to you real, to give it to you raw, to give you the real shit, which also means, all right, I can't just gloss over everything. I can't just tell you this was just the greatest thing on God's green earth with no flaws. There are flaws. There are things I would change. There are things I don't like. There are things that rubbed us the wrong way. But at the end of the day, we're also here to have fun. And this is a fun ass fucking movie. So the quibbles are quibbles. The points are points. Take them for what you will. But if you're a comics fan, if you're someone who listens to this show and it makes it this far into an episode of the show, then you're going to love this movie at the end of the day. Whether or not you agree with our points or not, this is something you can continue the conversation with in the Second Print Comics Fan Zone, our forum where everybody who joins our Patreon can jump in, join the conversation, patreon.com/secondprintpod. That is for the people that love hearing us and seeing us talk about comics so much that for some reason they also pay us money to do so. I don't get it, but they do it.
Oh, and I want to go ahead and give a special shout out to our friends at Fox and Sons Coffee. Mark, yes. By the time we do this show, we've got to handle all our other stuff. We've got a whole bunch of tasks for our day, for our week. So we need the energy to keep going. I have our Den Blend bag of beans, and my wife and I have been brewing that freaking daily since I went ahead and got my first bag from our good friend Stephen Fox from Fox and Sons Coffee. It's a family-owned business. They've got plenty of stuff. And folks, if you haven't known about it now, you do, because they got a subscription model. So that way, you can go ahead and get that new bag of coffee shipped to your house once a month, however much you want to do it. Foxandsons.com. Go ahead and use promo code SecondPrintPod and save 15% off your order of $25 or more. That's SecondPrintPod for 15% off your order of $25 or more.
Boom. There you go. And this mug right here, full of Brazilian honey prep. So there's a lot of great options there. Also, if you get it, once you try our sample, use our discount code, get your sample. You're going to want to go ahead and get the subscription to that 2-pound bag, because Steven is also going to give you $4 a month off the already very fantastic price for that bag. So you really can't go wrong. Foxandsons.com. Remzo, why don't you take us out?
Remember, if there's nothing else you could do, it's short, it's sweet, it's simple. It rolls off the tongue. It's read comics and change the world. Good night, America.
Buenas noches.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.